Good evening, everyone. Unfortunately, the talk, when I was actually giving it, was not recorded, so this is a re-recording of the talk I gave. This is the last talk on the Genjo Koan, class number 4. So I'm just going to dive right in here from where we left off at the end of talk 3. A fish swims in the ocean, and no matter how far it swims, there is no end to the water. A bird flies in the sky, and no matter how far it flies, there is no end to the air. However, the fish and the bird have never left their elements. When their activity is large, their field is large. When their need is small, their field is small. Thus, each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. If the bird leaves the air, it will die at once. If the fish leaves the water, it will die at once. So here we see again, Dogen, particularly in this Genjo Koan, uses a variety of metaphors and images to discuss practice, the nature of self, and what we may call a Buddha nature. He's also trying repeatedly to direct us to a reality that is all-inclusive, containing both separate discrete bits, as we saw earlier, you know, firewood and ash, flowers and weeds, mirrors and the reflections, all the things that make up our everyday experience of the world, and a reality of luminous unity, oneness, a reality that goes beyond birth and death, delusion and realizations, Buddhas and sentient beings. So here, in this passage, Dogen uses another analogy from the natural world to bring home this strong point of his. A fish swims in the ocean, and no matter how far it swims, there is no end to the water. A bird flies in the sky, and no matter how far it flies, there is no end to the air. However, the fish and the bird have never left their elements. So both the fish and the bird are at home in their elements. And from their point of view, there is no end to the ocean, no end to the sky. Nowadays, our view and understanding of oceans and sky is different from what Dogen probably understood. To someone in the 13th century, the sky was endless, the ocean had no limit. Maybe if Dogen was writing today, he would use perhaps the galaxy and the cosmos as an analogy for limitlessness instead of the ocean and the sky. When I was a child, I remember we were living on the outskirts of Calgary, and I used to get on my bike and ride out to grassy fields and there gaze at clouds forming and changing the sky during summer afternoons and also early autumn afternoons. As a child in Alberta, the prairie sky seemed endless, for no matter how far you rode your bicycle, the vastness of the sky remained endless. This limitlessness and lack of any kind of special shape or form is a quality of emptiness or Buddha nature. It is the boundlessness, the boundless nature of all things. In one translation of the Heart Sutra by Kazuaki Tanahashi and Roshi Joan Halifax, the word emptiness is replaced with boundlessness. And this word brings a very different quality to the Heart Sutra. Let me just read a few passages as Kazuaki and Roshi Halifax have translated this. O Shariputra, form is not separate from boundlessness. Boundlessness is not separate from form. Form is boundlessness, boundlessness is form. Feelings, perceptions, inclinations, and discernment are also like this. O Shariputra, boundlessness is the nature of all things. Boundlessness is free of ignorance and the end of ignorance. Boundlessness is free of old age and death, and free from the end of old age and death. It is free of suffering, arising, cessation, and path, and free of wisdom and attainment. Emptiness or boundlessness may seem at first to have little practically useful or helpful qualities. But in practice, we come to see that this is not so. Through Zazen, it is our growing recognition and acceptance of boundlessness that supports us to put down our brittle sense of self and soften our heart toward the world. As we open towards boundlessness, we begin to let go of trying to control that which we cannot control. We begin to see the sky and not just the ever-changing clouds of our life. Boundlessness is intimate, like the bird in the sky, the fish in the water. We have never left it. When their activity is large, their field is large. When their need is small, their field is small. Thus, each of them totally covers its full range, and each of them totally experiences its realm. If the bird leaves the air, it will die at once. If the fish leaves the water, it will die at once. When I was a child and teenager, I had only traveled briefly to England once, and the rest of my life up to that point had been lived in Calgary with a few short trips to Banff and Edmonton, and one very brief trip to the United States. I knew very little of the world, and my view of life was narrow. But just before I turned 20, I left Canada to live in Japan for over a year, and from that point on, I traveled much of East Asia, widening my view of the world. So I wonder, as a small child, was I any less connected to the world because my field was small? Am I more connected now that I have traveled to many different places? Pacific bluefin tuna are born in the Sea of Japan, and then the young swim some 8,000 kilometers across the Pacific to the California and Mexico coasts, where they spend years feeding and growing before traveling, at least some of them, 8,000 kilometers back to the Sea of Japan. Their field is large. Trout in a lake, their field is small. Some birds, like the house sparrows, are permanent residents here in the Vancouver area. They don't stray far from where they're born. And other birds travel 10,000 kilometers or more each year. The Arctic tern has the longest distance migration of any bird and sees more daylight than any other as it moves from the Arctic breeding ground to the Antarctic non-breeding areas each year. Both the Arctic tern and the house sparrow fully experience their lives. I don't imagine the sparrow feels restricted or that the Arctic tern feels worldly. One is not bigger than the other. Both are simply engaged in the world and fully supported by the world, just as we are. If the bird leaves the air, it will die at once. If the fish leaves the water, it will die at once. Well, putting the literal meaning aside, I think Dogen is cautioning us here not to believe our true life is outside of this here and now, that you and I, with our limits both real and imagined, are in full harmony with this universe, this boundless and complete reality. And Dogen clarifies this, I think, a little bit more in the very next passage. He writes, "Know that water is life and air is life. The bird is life and the fish is life. Life must be the bird and life must be the fish. You can go further. There is practice enlightenment which encompasses limited and unlimited life." As Dogen writes, we are all thoroughly interconnected in this world. Or to use Thich Nhat Hanh's famous word, inter-are. We inter-are with everything. So our life is not limited to this skin bag. Rather, the world is our life. Constantly we receive the gift of life from all around. Air, food, water, companionship, love, beauty. It goes on. At what point does the cool drink of water become you? At what point does the vegetable curry at dinner become me? Is it just when it enters my mouth or leaves my stomach? Are the trees which nourish my eyes and lungs not me? Am I defined by my skin, by my thoughts? Good questions to ask. What answers arise? Dogen shakes up our usual understanding of what our life is. Life manifests in birds, fish, in you, in me. This is how life lives life. And we should go beyond, as Dogen writes. Remember at the beginning of the Genjo Koan, at the very beginning of this text, Dogen said, "The Buddha way, in essence, is leaping clear of abundance and lack. Thus there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas." He tells us that through our practice we encompass our limited life and our unlimited life. By practice enlightenment we leap clear of being caught in a relative view of the world or an absolute view of the world, and we bring forth both. But I wonder here, what does Dogen mean by practice enlightenment? Well, let's read the next section and see if he offers any illumination about that. "Now, if a bird or a fish tries to reach the end of its element before moving in it, this bird or this fish will not find its way or its place. When you find your place, where you are, practice occurs, actualizing the fundamental point. When you find your way at this moment, practice occurs, actualizing the fundamental point. For the place, the way, is neither large nor small, neither yours nor others. The place, the way, has not carried over from the past and is not merely arising now. Accordingly, in the practice enlightenment of the Buddha way, to attain one thing is to penetrate one thing. To meet one practice is to sustain one practice." Well, I think in this passage, Dogen cautions us not to try and figure it all out before we take up our practice. When learning to make clay cups and plates, just to read the instructional manuals and watch demonstrations on YouTube will not help you much. You must pick up the soft, wet clay in your hands and feel its heft. Then, using your hands and your whole body, begin to explore how you, the tools and the clay, work together. You cannot think your way into becoming a potter. You cannot think your way into leaping beyond the limited and unlimited. What does it mean to find your place? We have all experienced finding our place or finding our life, if only for a brief moment. Sometimes walking in the woods, perhaps you suddenly become very aware of birdsong, the smell of wet cedar, and the small nameless fungi and mushrooms on a rotting stump. When we inhabit this place at this moment, practice occurs. Inhabiting, we stop seeking the imagined better moment and place. It means settling into the place we find ourselves, and in doing so, actualize the fundamental point. We inhabit our lives fully and experience the merging of difference and unity. So this is the Genjo Koan, the koan of your life. We sit in Zazen to slow down and look deeply at our life. We honor the present moment, clarifying it over and over, and bring our awareness to reality just as it is. We may not know the complete meaning of our practice. As Dogen says, the practice, the way, is neither large nor small, neither yours nor others. The place, the way, has not carried over from the past, and it is not merely arising now. In some ways, our practice is beyond words. There is no beginning and no end. But the entry gate is right here, right now. We pick up one practice, sustain it sincerely, we penetrate it fully. Dogen reaffirms for us over and over that practice and awakening are not two, just as limited and unlimited are both here, now. So it is with practice and awakening. And Dogen continues, here is the place, here the way unfolds. The boundary of realization is not distinct, for realization comes forth simultaneously with the mastery of Buddha Dharma. Do not suppose that what you attain becomes your knowledge and is grasped by your intellect. Although actualized immediately, the inconceivable may not be apparent. Its appearance is beyond your knowledge. Here, I think Dogen evokes faith or trust as well as humility. Now and here is all we have. So of course, the way unfolds here. Our place of practice is the life. Is this life of ours? Our place of practice is this life of ours. And as we live a life of practice, realization comes forth. But not in the way we might imagine. Usually, you know, I believe I'm here and what I want is over there, and I make effort to get there. But Dogen warns us, that the boundary is indistinct between here and there. The boundary is indistinct. As we become intimate with our life, with Buddha Dharma, we let go of our notions, our ideas. There is no way to measure where we are. And we may never know intellectually how far we have come or how far we have to go. As one old Zen saying puts it, the Buddha is only halfway there. The Buddha is only halfway there. Dogen, in his writings, does not disparage intellectual effort and understanding. But he sends a clear message that we cannot simply know our practice. We must practice our practice. And, as he makes clear in this passage, we may not know in an intellectual way, our own realization. So now we come to the last part. Dogen sums up what he's been saying about the need to practice in this koan. I'll read this now. Mayu, Zen Master Baoche, was fanning himself. A monk approached and said, Master, the nature of wind is permanent, and there is no place it does not reach. Why do you fan yourself? Although you understand that the nature of the wind is permanent, Mayu replied, you do not understand the meaning of its reaching everywhere. What is the meaning of its reaching everywhere? Asked the monk again. Mayu just kept fanning himself, and the monk bowed deeply. The actualization of the Buddha Dharma, the vital path of its correct transmission, is like this. If you say you do not need to fan yourself because the nature of wind is permanent and you can have wind without fanning, you will understand neither permanence nor the nature of wind. The nature of wind is permanent. Because of that, the wind of the Buddha's house brings forth the gold of the earth and makes fragrant the cream of the Long River. Very poetic passage. So let's see what we can make of it here. Well, Zen Master Baoche is not a very well-known Zen teacher. And this koan only appears in two or so of the numerous Chinese koan collections. But Dogen includes it here as an example of what he's been discussing in the Genjo Koan. One way to consider this is that the wind refers to Buddha nature and connects back to the question that really drove Dogen as a young man to travel to China in the first place. The term Buddha nature, as it's used in the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, as it's understood, say, in the Mahayana Buddhist tradition, is that all beings have Buddha nature, without exception, and that the cosmos itself is perfect, luminous, and complete, with you and me as intimately part of this perfection. And all of this is independent of our realizing this or not. So then, if the nature of wind, or if Buddha nature is permanent, and there's no place it does not reach, why does Master Baoche fan himself? Or, put it another way, if we are Buddha nature, why do we have to practice? Baoche said to the monk that although the monk understood the permanence of wind nature, he did not understand the meaning or perhaps how it permeates every place. Using his fan to illustrate moment-by-moment practice and awakening, Zen Master Baoche shows the way the wind nature permeates every place. Not just as you feel the wind when you fan, we actualize Buddha nature when we practice, when we fully show up for our life. Moment by moment, practice and awakening are not two. Our Buddha nature is not something to be fully grasped intellectually. Nor is it a one-time experience of spiritual fireworks. It is expressed or actualized through our life and through our practice. Dogen doesn't deny wonderful spiritual experiences, but he insists we return again and again to fully inhabiting the present moment as our ongoing practice. And in this way, we come to deeply appreciate our true vast nature and the long river of our life nurtures others. And we'll stop here. So much more could be said about the Genjo Koan, and it is a text to come back to over and over again, dipping into it, seeing what riches it may offer at this moment to our understanding, to our practice, as it is at this moment and at this place. I do hope you will, over the coming weeks, pick a phrase or two from this text and just hold it. Bring it to your mind several times a day and see what it may say to you beyond simply understanding the words. Thank you very much for listening.